Initiative and Leadership. Initiative means the doing of things without being told to do them. Leadership means the capacity to assume responsibility. They are both important character factors in preparing to sell your way through life. Your principal expression of initiative is the selection of a definite aim and the building of plans for the achievement of that aim. To begin with, certain essential steps are necessary. Briefly, the initiative and leadership steps can be defined as follows. 1. Decide definitely what you want. 2. Build a practical plan or plans for its achievement. 3. Surround yourself with an organization or group made up of people who have the knowledge and experience necessary to carry out your definite aim. 4. Have sufficient faith in yourself to visualize your aim as a finished reality even before you begin your plan. 5. Do not become discouraged no matter what obstacles you meet. 6. Don't guess. Get the facts as a basis for all your plans. 7. Don't be influenced by others who lack your faith and confidence. 8. Don't restrict your hours of labor. Work as long as necessary. 9. Concentrate upon one thing at a time. 10. Whenever possible, delegate to others the responsibility of details, but maintain a system of checking to see that they are carried out. Those are the elementary steps in establishing initiative and leadership. Of course, they also require concentration. But when you resolve to make persistence part of your plan, success will surely follow. The efficient leader is also an efficient salesperson. People do things because they want to do them for the leader. Leaders are optimistic and enthusiastic and know how to transmit that enthusiasm to everyone who works with them. An efficient leader is courageous. No one wants to follow a leader who is lacking in courage. The efficient leader has a keen sense of justice. He or she deals with subordinates fairly and justly. They also assume full responsibility for their actions. If subordinates make mistakes, the leader assumes whatever fault might be attached. An efficient leader reaches decisions quickly and changes them slowly. There are circumstances, of course, where deliberate examination of the facts is necessary before an intelligent decision can be reached. But once the facts have been organized, the leader makes a decision at once. The efficient leader has a pleasing personality.
I want to introduce you to the most wonderful person in the world. That's the person sitting in your seat right now. And when you commence to break down that person point by point, you'll find out just exactly where you're wonderful and why. And I'm going to ask you as I go along to grade yourself the rating that you think you're entitled to, and it can be anything from 0 to 100%. And then when you get through, add up the total and divide it by the traits, and that'll give you your average rating on the pleasing personality. And if you rate all the way through a general rating of 50%, you're doing very fine. Now, the first trait of a pleasing personality always is a positive mental attitude, because nobody wants to be around a person who's negative, and no matter what other traits you may have, if you don't have a positive mental attitude, at least when you're in the presence of people, you're not going to be considered to have a pleasing personality. Now, rate yourself on that anywhere from 0 to 100. And the next one is on flexibility. Now, what do I mean by flexibility? I mean the ability to unbend, to adjust yourself to the varying circumstances of life without going down under them. You know, there are a lot of people in this world who are stayed in their habits and in their mental attitude that they cannot adjust to anything that's unpleasant or anything that they don't agree with. Do you know why Franklin D. Roosevelt was one of the most, if not the most popular president we've had in our generation? Because he could be all things to all people. I've been in his office when senators and congressmen would come in there ready to cut his throat, and they'd go out singing his praises. just because of the mental attitude in which he received. In other words, he adjusted himself to their mental attitude, and he didn't get mad at the same time the other fellow did. That's a mighty good way of adjusting, too, incidentally, is to learn to be flexible enough not to get mad when the other fellow's mad. If you want to get mad, do it on your own account when the other fellow's in a good humor, and you'll have a much better chance of not getting hurt. On the pleasing tone of voice. Now, there's an important thing that you can experiment with. A lot of people have harsh tones. They talk, they have nasal tones, and they put that something into the tone of voice that irritates other people. You take any monotonous speaker, for instance, does not have personal magnetism, does not know how to give pitch and tone to his voice, and he'll never get his audience in a million years if he tries. You've got to learn to, if you're going to teach, if you're going to lecture, if you're going to do public speaking, or even in good conversation, you've got to learn to give a pleasant, pleasing tone to your tone of voice. If you can't do that now, you can do it by a little bit of practice. Oftentimes, by simply lowering your voice, not talking too loudly, you can give it that something that is pleasing to the ear. Or you can step it away up, or you'll make everybody want to hit you in a brick. Now, in between those two extremes, there's a happy medium that you want to learn to strike in your conversations and in your teaching and in your public speaking or whatever it is that you're doing. I don't think that anybody can teach another person how to make his tone of voice pleasing. I think you have to do that yourself. You have to do it by experimenting. But first of all, before you do it, you have to feel pleasing. How could you use a pleasant tone of voice when you felt angry, for instance? Or when you didn't like the person that you were talking to, how could you do it? Well, you can, but it's not too effective unless you really feel inside of you the way you're expressing yourself. I don't know of anything that'll pay off better than to be pleasing in the eyes of other people. It's just one of those things that you can't get along without. Tolerance. You know, a lot of people don't understand the full meaning of tolerance. That means an open mind on all subjects toward all people at all times. An open mind. In other words, your mind's not closed against anybody or anything. You're always willing to hear the last word or to hear an additional word about anything. Now, you'll be surprised at how few people there are in this world with open minds. Some of them are close to that you couldn't open them with a crowbar. You couldn't get a new idea in there if you tried. You've got to have an open mind, because the very minute people find that you have prejudices that involve them and their understanding of religion or politics or economics or anything else, the very minute they find out that you have a closed mind toward any of these things that affect them, they're going to back away from you. An open mind. What a marvelous thing it is to be able to be in possession of yourself so you can keep your mind open. And if you don't keep it open, you're not going to learn very much. If you have a closed mind, you'll find that you'll miss out on a lot of information, a lot of facts that you need that you couldn't get without an open mind. And then something it does to you inside, to have your mind closed up against anybody or anything, say that you have the last word, you don't want any more information. That means you've ceased to grow. The very moment you close your mind on any subject, say, that's the last word, I want no more information on it, then you cease to grow. A keen sense of humor. Now, what I mean by keen sense of humor is you have to have a disposition. If you don't have it, you have to cultivate it so that you can adjust yourself to all of these unpleasant things that come along in life without taking them too seriously. And another thing, keen sense of humor, and you'll never have any stomach ulcers. You know that? Stomach ulcers only come from one cause, and if you get them, they're only cured in one way, and that's to develop a keen sense of humor and work at it all the time. And incidentally, one of the finest tonics that you can take, in addition to vitamins and food supplements, which most of you need, is to have a good laugh at least several times a day, a good hearty laugh. If you don't have anything to laugh at, cook up something. Look at yourself in the glass, for instance. You can always get a laugh out of that. And you'd be surprised at how to change the chemistry of your mind right while you're doing it. And if you've got troubles, why, they'll melt away and they won't seem near as big when you're laughing as when you're crying. Keen sense of humor, what a marvelous thing it is. Next, the frankness of manner and speech. With discriminate control of the tongue at all times, based upon the habit of thinking before you speak. Now, most people don't do that. They speak first and think or regret afterwards. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to tell everybody exactly what you think of him, because if you do that, you have no friends. But frankness, not being evasive, not engaging in double talk, Nobody likes a person who's always evasive and never has never express an opinion about anything. And pleasing facial expression. Now, you know, if you study your facial expression in the mirror, it's a marvelous thing to see how much more pleasing you can make your facial expression when you try it than when you don't try. By smiling a little bit. You'll be surprised at how much more effective what you say is when you're smiling than when you're frowning or when you're looking serious. That makes a tremendous difference on the person that's listening. That smile is a marvelous thing. Learn to smile because you feel it. Where does a smile take place first? On your lips, your face, or where? In your heart, where you feel it. That's where it takes place. You don't have to be pretty. You don't have to be handsome. You don't have to, but a smile, it'll decorate you and embellish you no matter who you are. Make your facial expression much more beautiful. And then a keen sense of justice toward all people. Now, a keen sense of justice. In other words, being just with another person, even when it's to your disadvantage to do so. What a wonderful thing that is, and how that does endear you to other people when they know very well that your being just with them is costing you something. Do it. There's no particular virtue in being just with the other fellow when you're benefiting by it. Keen sense of justice toward all people at all times. And then next one, sincerity of purpose. Nobody likes a person who is obviously insincere in what he says and does, who's trying to be something that he's not, who's saying something that doesn't represent his inner thoughts, and you know that's true. It's not as bad as out-and-out lying, but it's the first cousin to it, lacking of sincerity of purpose. Then versatility, a wide range of knowledge of people and the world events outside of one's immediate personal interest. You take a person, he's got his nose so closely to the grindstone in some one thing that he knows nothing about anything that's going on outside of that. And he'll not be interesting as a conversationalist nor in any other way unless he has a wide enough range of things generally to be able to talk to you about the things that interest you. Do you know the best way in the world to make yourself liked by other people? Talk to them about the things that interest them. That's it. And incidentally, if you talk to the other fellow about things that interest him, when you get around to talking about things that interest you, he'll be a receptive listener, much more so. Tactfulness in speech and manner. Now, you don't have to, in your speech and in your manner, you don't have to reflect by your mental attitude, by your words, everything that goes on in your mind. If you do that, why, everybody, you'll be an open book and everybody can read you at will. And some of them, sometimes they'll read you when you wish they hadn't. Tactfulness in your speech and in your attitude toward other people. You can always be tactful. You'd be surprised how much you can do with people if you're just tactful with them. Oftentimes, instead of telling people to do things or asking them to do things, requesting them to do things or demanding them to do things, it might be very tactful and helpful if you requested them and asked them if they would mind doing things. Even though you're in authority to give them an instruction, it's still better to ask if they would mind doing certain things. One of the most outstanding employers I ever knew, ever gave any of his employees direct instructions. That was Andrew Carnegie. He always asked his associates and his employees, even the humblest, if they would mind doing something for him. Or would it be convenient? Or would it be suitable? Never ordered them to do anything, but asked them always. No wonder he got along so well with people. No wonder he was so successful. Then the promptness of decision. Now, nobody can be very well liked and have a very pleasing personality who always puts off making a decision when he has all of the facts before him and ought to make the decision right on the spot. I don't mean by that they should go off half-cocked or should render snap judgments, but when they have all of the facts and the time has arrived for a decision, get in the habit of making those decisions. And if you make one that's wrong, you can always reverse it, and don't be too little to reverse yourself when you find out that you should reverse yourself. There's a great advantage in being fair enough with yourself and with the other fellow to reverse yourself if you've made the wrong decision. And of course, I don't need to make much comment on faith and infinite intelligence. You know what your faith is there. You should rate very high if you are following your religion, whatever it is, faithfully. You should rate very high on that one. But you'd be surprised how many people there are that give lip service to this question of faith and infinite intelligence and don't do very much about outside of lip service. I don't know how the Creator feels about it, but you know, I believe that an ounce of acts is worth a million tons of good intentions. Appropriateness of words is free from slang and wisecracks and profanity. I never saw an age when the people indulge in so many wisecracks, slang statements, double talk, and all that sort of thing. It may seem smart to the fellow who's doing it, but it's not smart to the fellow who's listening. He may laugh at it, but he's not going to be impressed with a fellow that engages too much in these wisecracks. It's a wonderful thing to be able to control the English language so that you can convey to the other fellow precisely what you have in your mind, or what you want him to think you have in mind, what you want him to know. Then the controlled enthusiasm. You'd say, well, why controlled enthusiasm? Why not turn it loose and let it run riot? Well, just because you'll get in danger, into trouble if you do. Your enthusiasm ought to be handled very much like you handle your electricity. Now, it's a very wonderful thing. It washes dishes, washes your clothes, runs the toaster, maybe cooks your food on the stove, does a lot of things, but you handle it with care, and you turn it on when you want it, and then turn it off when you don't want it. Your enthusiasm should be handled with just as much care. You turn it on when you want to turn it on, and then you can just as quickly turn it off. If you're not able to turn it off as quickly as you turn it on, somebody will come along and get you all enthused over something that you ought not to be enthused over. Did you ever hear that happening? And boy, what a sucker you will be at that time for his prey, whatever he wants to do. Well, he's got you all worked up in a state of enthusiasm. Because you know what enthusiasm is? It's a mild form, and sometimes not too mild, of hypnotism, self-hypnosis. You can hypnotize yourself with enthusiasm, and you can hypnotize the other fellow to an extent, but don't do that too much. You can be too enthusiastic with the other fellow where you wear him out. Wear him out pulling down his mental shades and resisting you. The man who can turn on his enthusiasm at the right time, the right amount, and then turn it off at the right time, that's the man that's going to be considered to have a pleasing personality. And incidentally, if you're not able to exude enthusiasm when you want to, you certainly are not going to be considered a pleasing personality, because there are times when you definitely need it. In teaching, or in lecturing, or in speaking, or in ordinary conversation, or in selling, or almost anything that you're doing in human relationships requires a certain amount of enthusiasm at times. And enthusiasm is one of those things you can cultivate. It's just like all these other qualities. There's only one quality in here that you can't cultivate. I'll see if you can find it. This is the one that Andrew Carnegie said he could give you every one of the others except that one.
Personal magnetism.
That's right, exactly. You've got just so much of that, even that. That's subject to control and to transmutation too. But that's something that one person can't give to another. Well, good clean sportsmanship. Being a sportsman about everything. You're not going to win all the time in life. Nobody can do that. There are going to be times when you lose. When you lose, lose gracefully and graciously. Lose and say, well, I lost, but maybe it's the best thing that I did, because I'm going to start looking immediately for that seed of an equivalent benefit, and next time when time comes to lose, I'm going to let somebody else lose. So I'm going to wise myself up. And then don't take it too seriously, no matter what it is. And then common courtesy. Oh, what a marvelous thing that is. Just common, ordinary garden variety of courtesy toward everybody. People, especially toward people that are obviously on a lower plane socially or economically or financially than yourself. What a wonderful thing it is to be courteous to the person to whom you don't have to be courteous. It's a wonderful thing. It does something to the other fellow, and it does something to you. I always hate to see anybody lording it over another person. Nothing gets me upset quicker than to go into a restaurant and have some newly rich or somebody come in and start ordering the waiters around and abusing them. Even sometimes they may deserve it, but I have never learned to like that. I've always thought that anybody that would abuse another person in public, with or without a cause, had something wrong with his machinery, and there's something he's missing in life, and you may be sure that there is something he's missing. You're a human magnet, and you're attracting to you the sum and the substance of what goes on in your heart and soul. Then good showmanship. You've got to be a showman if you're going to sell yourself in any walk of life. You've got to be a good showman. You've got to dramatize these things that you're talking about and these people that you're doing business with. You've got to learn the art of showmanship as you go along. And it's something you can learn. And then I don't need to mention to you that you should have the habit of going the extra mile. We've spent a whole lesson on that. And then on temperance, in eating, drinking, work and play, and in thinking. Temperance, that means not too much, not too little of anything. Do yourself just as much damage with eating as you can with drinking liquor. Just as much. The rule that I go by in all these things is that I don't allow anything to take charge of me. When I was smoking, when I got to the point where the cigars were smoking me, then I quit. I can take a cocktail. I can take two. I guess I could take three. I don't remember ever having taken more than that in a social evening, but I could if I wanted to. But if I ever found them taking me, or if I ever found my being able to resist them, I'd part company with them in a hurry. Then patience, under all circumstances. Patience. You have to have patience in this world we're living. It's a world of competition. You're constantly being called upon to use your patience. And by using patience, you learn to time these things so that you get action out of other people at the time once more when the time is more favorable. But if you don't have patience, you try to force the hand of other people, you'll get a no, or you get a turn down or a knockdown when you don't want it. You require patience in order that you may time your relationships with people. Appropriateness of personal adornment. That's important to anybody in public life. Gracefulness in posture and carriage of the body. Now, if I came in and looked like this, of course I'd be very comfortable. That's much easier. But it's finer for me to stand up like this, look like I can stand straight without leaning on anything. Slump around and be careless in your posture. Marchie is one who is not very particular about his own personal appearance and so forth. It's a good idea to have gracefulness in posture and carriage of the body. And then humility of the heart. I don't know of anything as wonderful as to have true humility of the heart. Last but not least, personal magnetism. That's that has reference to the sex emotion, of course. An inborn trait and the only one of the traits of personality which cannot be cultivated, but it can be controlled and directed to beneficial usage. As a matter of fact, the most outstanding leaders, salesmen, speakers, clergymen, lawyers, lecturers, teachers, most outstanding in every field of endeavor, as a matter of fact, are people who have learned to transmute sex emotion. That is to say, convert that great creative energy over into doing the thing that you want to do most at the time being. And that word transmute is something to conjure with, something to look up in the dictionary until you make sure you understand what it means. Now, you've got a lot of thinking to do about this, and you're going to make discoveries about yourself. You're going to find out that when you really come down to answering these questions and giving yourself a rating, that you have certain weaknesses that you didn't know you had, and that you have certain strengths and certain good qualities that you perhaps had undervalued. Let's find out about ourselves to see just where we stand. What it is that makes us tick. Why people like us, why people dislike us. And I could take any one of you and sit down with you, and by asking you, I'll say not over 20 questions, I could lay my finger right on what's keeping you from being popular, if you are not popular. And you can do the same thing. That's what I want you to do. I want you to learn to analyze people, starting with yourself, find out what it is that makes people popular, what it makes them tick. And when you do that, you have one of the greatest assets that you could possibly imagine.
The multiple disadvantages that follow and blast the lives of those with no clearly defined purpose are without number. Drifting people are like rudderless ships. All the voyages of their lives are bound in shallows and misery. Sad and restless people are those who have not even one definite goal for which they can strive. History is rich in its recitals of individuals who have hitched their wagons to a star, a single star, and ridden it into the heights of great achievement. Great people in ages gone by have given us words to be used as symbols to guide us, but no word should be etched so high in the sky as to arrest the attention of every young man and woman as these. Quo animo, which in free translation means what mind and what intention. Those who know where they're going usually get there. They do not dissipate their strength in aimless expenditure of time and energy. Rather, they concentrate their efforts upon a definite object and exert all their powers to attain that end. Sheer muscle or brawn brings a daily wage. The price of it is fixed by the law of supply and demand. General services rendered by someone who has no specialized talent. All of the foregoing statements are quite obvious. Everyone knows them. Yet 98 out of every 100 people fail all through life because they do not follow the simple principle of working with a definite purpose. This is the theme, the lesson, and the inexorable rule of success. If you wish to learn and practice how to sell your way through life.
May I tell you that throughout the 20 years I spent in analyzing successful people to learn what made them tick, I discovered that successful people almost invariably were successful in exact proportion to the extent that they had met and mastered obstacles and defeat. It can be explained by considering that nature has so arranged the affairs of men that strength grows out of struggle. If men had no problems and were never forced to exert themselves, they would atrophy and wither away through disuse of their brain cells, the same as would happen with an arm or a leg if it were not given exercise. Nature penalizes people for neglect to properly use their physical bodies, as everyone knows. And the same is true of the brain cells with which we think. If we do not use the mind, it becomes lazy and unreliable. Human problems force people to develop their minds through use. I was blessed at birth with four wonderful causes for struggle, namely, poverty, fear, superstition, and illiteracy. Because I was destined to devote my life to helping my fellow men overcome these four common causes of failure, and I needed to learn something about them at their source. Well, on the lighter side of my blessings, you may be interested in knowing that I was tagged with the name Napoleon. Well, with the hope of my parents that a great uncle by the same name would leave me a portion of his fortune when he died. But fortunately, he didn't. I say fortunately because I know what happened to those to whom he did leave his money. While I, in my struggle to master poverty, fear, superstition, and illiteracy, uncovered knowledge which I have been privileged to share with millions of people who have benefited by it. I close each day's labor with a prayer which keeps my store of blessings eternally filled, and I shall express that prayer now. O infinite intelligence, I ask not for more riches, but for more wisdom with which to make better use of the blessings with which I was endowed at birth, through the privilege of embracing my own mind and directing it to ends of my own choice. Amen.